Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde. Ich begrüße Sie zu einer Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt, aufgezeichnet in Banja Luka in der Republika Srpska. Ich sage jetzt, obwohl das ja politisch nicht ganz korrekt ist, in der Serbischen Republik, hier in Bosnien-Herzegowina. Und wir haben einen sehr prominenten Gast heute in der Sendung. Es ist nämlich der Präsident der Republika Srpska. Es ist Milorad Dodik. Und Milorad Dodik ist ein ganz profilierter Politiker hier in dieser geschichtsträchtigen Balkanregion. Ein Politiker auch mit großen internationalen Beziehungen. Er hat hervorragende Kontakte zum Beispiel zum türkischen Präsidenten Erdogan, natürlich zu Präsident Putin. Er ist in der Organisation BRICS dabei und hier hat die Republika Srpska einen sehr starken Status. Ist ein kleines Land mit 1 Million Einwohnern, eine Zone in Bosnien-Herzegowina. Das ist eine Föderation, die hervorgegangen ist aus den Wirren des Jugoslawienkrieges. Eine ganz komplizierte Geschichte. Und wir werden hier natürlich über alle Fragen sprechen, die uns interessieren, international, aber natürlich auch die Themen, die hier in der Republika Srpska zu reden geben. Milorad Dodik ist 1959 geboren. Er ist Politikwissenschaftler, Sozialdemokrat, Vater von 2 Kindern und Großvater von 7 Enkeln. I just said that you are the grandfather of 7 grandchildren. Also ganz herzlich willkommen, Herr Präsident, Mr. Dodik. Very welcome, Mr. President, to our show, to our program. Und ich möchte hier gleich noch einfügen, wir haben einen Übersetzer hier, und zwar von der Universität in Banja Luka. Es ist sogar der stellvertretende Dean. Es ist Professor Kesic, den wir natürlich auch herzlich begrüßen möchten. Should I start with my first question? A few months ago, we had an interview with President Vucic. And he had in Belgrade, and he had a very dark perspective on the war in Ukraine. He said, he's preparing Serbia for a world war scenario, for a very huge conflict in Europe. What is your view?
I also am afraid of such a development, and these few months have shown Mr. Vucic to be right, because we are witnessing that the war is not stopping down, it's actually spreading and intensifying. Deliveries of weapons from the West are increasing, and nowadays we are hearing about a permission to use long-range missiles for targets deep into Russia. And I don't think that anything good can come out of that. Nowadays, nobody is mentioning anymore how this all started and why this conflict is there, actually. And I remember Chancellor Scholz at the time when he was quite optimistic, and he said that Germany would be helping the Ukrainians with blankets and non-lethal weapons and so on. Now we see that that narrative has dramatically changed. We see more and more that this war resembles more a war between Russia and the West, and Ukraine is just a collateral damage. I belong to the group of people who condemns the war, and I don't think that we should take sides and be part of it. In any case, not like Europe hastily did following urge of some politicians. America is still far away. They urge Europe to spend all its resources on this war. The American desire in this case would probably be to create a permanent conflict between Europe and Russia so that they never become partners as they once could be. And what did Europe gain from this? Nothing. They actually lost the competitive edge. Now that they no longer import energy from Russia, they need to pay for that same product a higher price coming from the United States, which in a way weakens Europe, and we see that Europe is not as good as it used to be in the past. Europe was only too happy and too ready to jump into imposing sanctions on Russia. America also has sanctions on Russia, but at the same time there is a lot of trading going on between the United States and Russia, and in the long run this weakens Europe.
You know President Putin quite well. You talk to him regularly. Everybody talks about President Putin. What is he about? What is his motivation? What does he want? What is his goal?
He is no doubt a big statesman and a big leader, and by that very fact, he will have a lot of enemies from other countries, but also many friends as well. Regardless of this hysteria in the West when you mention his name, I can still say that he is a man of peace. But he still could not allow Russia getting into danger by this expansion of the West onto other countries, more particularly in Ukraine, which, if allowed, could mean that it would only take a couple of minutes for Moscow to be attacked, and he is not the kind of man who would allow that. On the other hand, there are 15 million Russians living in Ukraine. Also, the fact is that Putin did not go to Mexico to fight a war there on the border with the United States. It is the other way around. The war is fought on the border with Russia. He was forced to defend his people in Ukraine, also to strengthen his geopolitical position in his very close vicinity. And there is this old saying that persists in the West, dating all the way back to Bismarck, who said, if you want to rule Russia, then force it to fight a war against Ukraine. Because thus you create these two rather close nations, create animosity that will not be easily rooted out. And it looks like the kind of story that was once embraced by Hitler and other people. Nowadays, the West, by pushing this human rights narrative, is trying to do the same thing under disguise. If the West, if Germany cares about territorial integrity of countries, why did they ruin Yugoslavia? How is it possible that the Germans were entitled to unify their two parts of the country, while Putin is not entitled to defend his 15 million Russians in Ukraine? Likewise, how were the Germans entitled to unify the east and west part of their country, while the Serbs, for example, are not entitled to unify their people on the two sides of the River Drina? So why should we accept such lies? Why should we accept that for you there are certain criteria in place, while for us there are other criteria in place?
Do you think President Putin will use nuclear weapons? This is something which is pushed aside in the West, in Germany. Do you think that we are close to a point where President Putin could use a nuclear weapon? You know him.
I think that Putin is a man of reason. He knows well enough that if you attack one NATO country, there will be a collective response. And he sees it clearly that there is a deliberate pressure to push him into that direction. If you have a situation in which obviously Russia is making progress in the field, and that it is obvious that Russia is going to win this war, and that the West is nowadays sending long-range missiles to strike deep into Russia, how else can you call this other than escalation and an intent? But of course they will always find good intention to camouflage it in. Do you know the name for the NATO operation of bombing the Serbs in the Balkans with depleted uranium, which to this day is causing malignant diseases in our population? It was called Merciful Angel. Very cynical, isn't it? And then they say we should be a member of the alliance. I beg your pardon? Asking us to be a member while at the same time you threw depleted uranium onto our children, which some of them are yet to be born. So what kind of intention is that? Uranium is an integral part of any nuclear arsenal, right? And they've already thrown it here. And they have already done it both here. They dropped it here and in Serbia. So what should we do? Should we be thankful for them for dropping depleted rather than enhanced uranium? I'm sure that Putin will not use nuclear weapons because he does not have an issue with the populations of these countries. He has an issue with political elites of these countries. Secondly, he is not a desperate man. There are some other people who are desperate. As far as I know, the support for Scholz nowadays is the lowest ever for a leader in Germany. In the beginning, they were very loud and bombastic. Nowadays, they are nowhere to be seen. Such people could do something like that. But as far as I know, at least publicly, Germany does not have nuclear weapons. So Putin will not use nuclear weapons against the populations of other countries.
President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, said repeatedly, Putin has to be stopped militarily. If he is not stopped, he will attack the Baltic states, he will attack Poland. And she's saying basically he's about to conquer the former Soviet Union. What do you say to these arguments?
It is a propaganda spin based on fallacious assumptions. They don't know what else to do, what else to say, other than distracting attention of their peoples with these spins. It is not true. I'm not a Putin's spokesperson. There are some things that I might say are not okay, but I'm under no pressure to defend anything. I've never been pressured by mighty Russia to say anything, unlike the situation from the West, which imposes a lot of pressure. It would have been much better, both for Germany and the EU, if they had built strategic partnership with Russia and preserved the country. From our experience, we see that they do not want partners, they want to have subjugated nations or subjugated elites who would implement their plans. For example, in Ukraine, you have an absurd situation in which liberal countries are defending a communist legacy in the territory of Ukraine. Historical Crimea has always been part of Russia. Lenin and Khrushchev gave large portions of Ukraine to Ukraine because at the time it was Soviet Union anyhow, so it did not seem to matter that much. So are the Brussels people or other elites now saying that they are defending these communist moves by Lenin and Khrushchev? Is that the point? That is exactly what they did here in Bosnia-Herzegovina and thus created a very unsuccessful country. If they cared about territorial integrity of Ukraine or Bosnia-Herzegovina, why don't they revive Soviet Union with its territorial integrity?
One very last question to this conflict, but it's very interesting what you're saying because no one hears these opinions in our media on an occasional basis. But let me ask you one very short question. Do you think the war in Ukraine was inevitable, or could Putin have avoided it, or did he have to make war? Was it inevitable? What's your opinion?
It was not inevitable. This war was a wish by Western political elites, and they cheated from the very beginning. And when they created Minsk agreement, they cheated on Putin. And then when Putin spoke about it at Munich conference, they laughed at him. And they thought they had supremacy and ability to get into the very heart of Russia and to do what has been a historical intention of the West, and that is to have the natural resources of Russia. And basically this brings us also back to the intentions of Napoleon, Hitler. The times have changed. It is only being done in a different way now. They also try to do it through privatization at a certain point, and the synonymous for this is Khodorkovsky. He had already made some gains in Siberia with certain establishments, but then Putin came along and changed the situation. Brzezinski spoke about the need to divide Russia into five territories to make the ruling of it easier. And I have not observed the United States and the West giving up on that theory. It seems that Putin is more of a nightmare to the West than the West more of a nightmare to Putin. The war could have been avoided, Minsk agreement should have been respected, and strategic interests of a global power called Russia should have been observed, rather than supporting Zelensky, who actually banned Russian language in schools, banned many of cultural Russian aspects in Ukraine, but you heard no condemnation coming from the West about it. And to make this case clear that this is not up to Putin, there is this very remarkable statement by Ms. Merkel and the French President Orlando from the times of the Minsk Agreement, who clearly said, we created Minsk Agreement to buy more time for Ukraine to get better prepared and better armed. So who wanted the war?
Very shortly, when will the war end?
Unfortunately, I think that it is impossible now to end it with any kind of negotiation. Ukraine, just like Bosnia and Herzegovina, is an artificial communist creation. And since the world has been brought back onto the positions of national states and or is increasingly getting to that position, I believe that until the Russians get to strategic positions which matter to them, I don't see it getting stopped. Unfortunately, there will be a lot of destruction along the way. And it seems silly when people like Zelensky or Berbekov say that the war will only end once the Russians retreat from Ukraine. It sounds ridiculous.
You have one thing in common with the United States of America. You are a strong supporter of Israel. You received an award in Jerusalem. What fuels your enthusiasm for Israel? What is the reason behind your strong support of Israel and especially also the current government?
The Jewish people has suffered so much through history, and those situations and facts should not be repeated. I think they are well known. The mass suffering of that people has engendered this fear that they would suffer again, and they are doing everything possible to avoid that. And the day when Hezbollah terrorists went into Israel and killed these young people there, when I saw them killing children as young as 10 without any hesitation, just because they were Jews, I got this impression deep inside of me that this evil is being perpetrated upon the Jews again. On the other hand, the Jewish people is entitled to have their state, and I, of course, support their right to have a state. Thirdly, here where we are in Banja Luka, some 40 kilometers away, there was a big, big concentration camp, Jasenovac, which was formed by Croatian Ustaše, and where they killed more than 500,000 Serbs and more than 40,000 Jews. Thus, they created this bond between the Serbs and the Jews because they suffered similarly.
Mm. Do you think that the reaction of the government of Netanyahu is proportionate to this massacre on the 7th of October?
Is that proportionality even possible, or is that just a stupidity invented in the West? So if they killed 700 people here, can you go there and kill exactly 700 people there? I think it's stupid. The Jews have their state. They knew the strength of the state of Israel. They did this provocation in a brutal way. And the Western approach, as far as I know, has always been trying to diminish totalitarian regimes. And as far as I know, in Gaza, Hamas is still the ruling force. And one of the objectives was to remove Hamas. Otherwise, what is a guarantee that they are not going to do this again? Of course, it hurts me too when I see the suffering of Palestinians and when I see children getting killed. It hurts me, and it also probably hurts a lot of Jews in Israel when they see that. But do you know what the NATO's name for the children getting killed here with their bombs was? They call it collateral damage.
Let us talk about Republika Srpska. This is a complicated topic for the Swiss or German audience, and I read somewhere that you once said, like Martin Luther King, you have a political dream. You wished for the secession of the Republika Srpska from Bosnia and Herzegovina, And after the adaptation of the Srebrenica resolution, you drafted a document for the peaceful secession of the Republika Srpska. Now, this has to be explained for the bigger audience. Why do you want to secede? What is the core of the conflict here?
First of all, we do not have a plan for secession, nor do we pursue that course in resolution of these conflicts. We are opposed to imposing impossible solutions. Bosnia and Herzegovina, in its history, has never been an independent country. In the Ottoman Empire, it was just a pashaluk, and when the Austro-Hungarians came here during their empire, they also wanted to make Bosnia and Herzegovina a province of theirs, and they sent their emissary called Kalaj, an Austrian man, who ruled in Bosnia and Herzegovina throughout the annexation period, which lasted for almost 30 years, doing basically the same types of crimes that had been done during the 500 years of Ottoman Empire, displacing Serbs from the territories along the river Drina, sending them elsewhere and bringing in the Muslim population. Also, it is a well-known fact that Muslims in Bosnia, the current nowadays Muslims, actually have Christian roots. They were basically converted from the Orthodox believers, and that is who the Serbs belong to, and also, to a certain extent, also from the Catholic confession, basically Croats. In the Kingdom of Yugoslavia and also in the Socialist Republic of Yugoslavia up to the 1960s, they were called Serbs of Muslim confession, mainly of Orthodox background. And up to the 60s, when Tito decided to spread his influence into non-aligned countries by giving them this actually Bosnian Muslim population who were previously called Muslim Serbs, now they were called just Muslims with a small letter M, not capital M. But there is not a nation called Muslims. It is basically a religious orientation. This is how they were called here. It is a product of communism. Such a nation had not existed before. And again, we see the Americans defending a communist product by taking the Muslim side here in Bosnia.
And what is your dream for Republika Srpska? What is your most important goal and your most important fight in your political life?
The composition and constitution of Bosnia and Herzegovina was a fraud. There were no historical basis for its creation, and me being right is supported by this fact that 30 years after the conflict, things are not still working well in Bosnia. We can camouflage things, but then again 30 years later we will have realized that we had not created proper foundations for a country to function. Just like in communist Bosnia and Herzegovina before, they had this concept of brotherhood and unity, which lasted for some time, but then eventually ended up in bloodshed. If things are not working out well, then it's only rational to attempt to resolve it in another way. However, nowadays Bosnia seems to be a must, almost like trying to camouflage the failures from the past. Biden feasted upon this notion that Serbs were beasts, and he took it as an instrument to create the things they are like today. And nowadays he is the president of the United States of America. I remember him from the days when he lied callously. And what I will never forget is that he took such pleasure in lying. And I know for as long as people like him are sitting in American administration, it will be impossible to agree with them. They built their careers on this.
Yeah. And what is your goal for Republika Srpska? What's the solution of this whole conflict, of this camouflage?
We don't want any conflict. First of all, we want our rights guaranteed in Dayton Peace Agreement and the constitution of this country given back to us, and to annul all the impositions by the West and Western countries which were done using the historical moment and time, and which were all detrimental for our side. We have a constitutional court with 9 judges, 2 Serbs, 2 Muslims and 2 Croats, and 3 foreigners, one coming from Switzerland, Germany and Albania, and the one from Switzerland is Swiss-German, and it takes majority of 5, 3 foreigners and 2 Bosniaks. And they pass anti-constitution decisions, further complicating the situation, believing that they could use force to impose their anti-constitution measures. For 20 years, we were celebrating our Day of Republic, the 9th of January, and all the ambassadors would come for our celebration. And then the Muslims initiated procedure to abolish that day. Something was insulting to them there. And by the way, no war conflict was associated with it because the Republic was created prior to it. And then they shamefully said that this is so because it falls on a religious date. But if you look at Orthodoxy, you will not find a single day throughout the year where there isn't a religious holiday of some sort. 3 foreign judges and 2 Muslims. They eliminate the Serbs from decision-making, and they want me to believe in that and to applaud to it. Of course, it's very difficult for me to explain to some people in the West that we do not accept some decisions by the constitutional court, because in other countries, constitutional courts are without any question. But in Bosnia and Herzegovina, it is an inquisition court against us, the Serbs. And when we say, let's at least have the law on procedures, they would not allow it. Your country is successful because it has regulations, because it protects every collective interest. We do not have that. Do you know what principles there are in the Constitutional Court, based on the rules, again, adopted by the 3 foreigners and 2 Muslims? We do not have a law on Constitutional Court. And every day we expect another surprise coming from them. We are always in some sort of expectation what we are supposed to see the following day because of these interventions and because of the High Representative who was sent here by Ms. Merkel because she didn't know what to do with him in Germany. And you asked me about my vision of the Republic of Srpska. Give us back our constitutional rights, and we will remain in Bosnia and Herzegovina. If you don't give us back our constitutional rights, for the beginning at least, do not expect us to accept your non-constitutional rights, and we couldn't care less what you say about it. We do not have a secession plan. We know what secession is, but we are pursuing a possible model which could be peaceful. But if we cannot create a constitutional Bosnia and Herzegovina, then peaceful separation seems to be the only way out. I am against a violent separation. I am opposed to Sarajevo holding all the power, suppressing the Serbs and forcing them to be here. I would like to believe that there is reason around.
Time is running out, unfortunately. I have one final question to you, Mr. President. You have been in politics since 30 years. You have lived through very dark times with war and separation and all the problems we talked about. What is the most important thing you have learned about life, about yourself and about politics throughout your political career?
In life, the most important thing is to live in peace and knowing what belongs to you, what is yours, what is your resource, what is it that you have. Rather than having some liberal imaginations, having some experiments like the kind of that we've had, something brought from the West here, which basically was an experiment and implementing some imaginations that were created elsewhere. A general description of Bosnia and Herzegovina in Tito's Yugoslavia was that Bosnia and Herzegovina was a small Yugoslavia, and with participation of 3 dominant nations, just like in Yugoslavia, which had 3 dominant nations, Serbs, Croats, Muslims. And this Yugoslavia was brought down by Croatia and Slovenia, who accepted the idea from Mr. Genscher of Germany, who did not want to accept Maastricht until these countries got away. And then Yugoslavia was gone. But they are trying to keep this small Yugoslavia alive, nowadays called Bosnia and Herzegovina, but with a different ratio of forces. Currently, the biggest nation in Bosnia is the Muslims, and then the Serbs, and then the Croats. The Croats are disappearing, and they want to see domination of the Muslims in Bosnia and Herzegovina by centralizing Bosnia and Herzegovina as a unitary state, which means there has to be domination of the Muslims. Well, you see, we are not willing to accept that. But obviously, you in the West will be able to see it yourselves, what it looks like in some local scenarios. But that, again, is now a problem of yours, not mine. But if you want to act out this story about small Yugoslavia, why don't you bring back the big Yugoslavia?
One very last thing. We are here in the presidential palace. There is a big cathedral, very close proximity, the Orthodox cathedral. In Europe, in the West, religion is going down. Christianity almost seems forgotten. What is the importance of religion in your life? What's the importance of religion here in Republika Srpska and generally? How important is it?
Here, people are very close and attached to church. The Muslims are also very close to their mosques. It's a matter of identity, and people like to preserve that type of identity. And if I understand things well, that should be an individual right given to everyone. Of course, there are people who think that church as such belongs to the past and should disappear. 20 years ago, I read that there was the end of this history as we know it, and that new neoliberal history is being created. And he was wrong. He was wrong about so many things. And it would appear that Huntington from that time was right when he wrote the book about clashes between civilizations. And if that is such a non-question, why should there be such a big issue about migrants coming from Middle East? One would expect Europe to open its arms and embrace them without any hesitation. At least that was the storyline. But now, why is there any issue if it's not indeed a Christian Europe? How can you in Europe be without any empathy watching children getting drowned, falling from overcrowded boats? Why did you give them this false hope that they would be accepted in Europe? Why wasn't there a safe transport from Africa into Europe? Or maybe there is some pleasure being taken in the fact that many of these people get drowned in the sea. It's not a news anymore, and it happens on a daily basis. Thus, Europe loses not only its face, but also its soul. Many say that these migrants actually come from countries that were once exploited by the West, and that these children are coming to collect the debt. We'll see how it goes, I don't know. I'm just observing and watching. The Republic of Srpska will remain a republic of our people, and those living here should receive guarantees for every kind of freedom, including Muslims, Croats, and everyone. And that is how this republic is living its life. We do not have any problem with other people belonging to other confessions. But we are not willing to create migration camps here and to populate them with migrants. I did not invite them to come here. Ms. Merkel invited them to go there. Why should they then be withheld here? They are just transiting through Bosnia and Herzegovina. Why don't you at least sometimes admit that you were wrong? And then we could discuss some new approaches. It is true that we are small. It is true that we do not have an international seat in the United Nations, but we do have a recognition in an international document. History has taught us not to be too trustful. We are not asking for anything else other than the right for our people to live here. We equate freedom with the Republic of Srpska any way you defined it, an entity or anything else. If Europe needs new labor and migrants, it's welcome to take them. We don't need them. We have people who are unemployed here. We want to build our lives. We want to build our economy. Germany might need 5 million migrants to work there. We don't need a single one. So why should we be a victim of their situation?
Mr. President, thank you very much for this conversation. Many thanks. Thank you.